city of Detroit is on the rise these days, having turned a very tragic corner. Bankruptcy, shrinking population, the trial and conviction of its political leader, former Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. The story of the Motor City, its rise and fall, where millions of African Americans fled to escape Jim Crow restrictions in the South in the Great Migration, is a story of America. Its racial politics, its union power, its industrial innovation in the 20th century, and Detroit, the center of American entertainment in the golden age of Motown. Then things changed.
Is it a safe place to live, a good place to live,
a good place to live, and I think it's as safe as any other. There's not a body on every corner, and the average citizen in this city is not confronted with the fear of his life. So don't bring me that crap about Detroit. We're no different. We have the same problems any city in America.
Speaking to ABC News, that's Mayor Coleman Young, the longest-serving mayor in Detroit history for more than 17 years, the African-American face of political power in the Motor City. In his new book, Black Detroit, A People's History of Self-Determination, historian Herb Boyd writes of how an irresistible economic promise from Detroit became a bitter political disappointment.
They had these job opportunities going all the way back to the 1920s when Henry Ford made that $5 a day request that kind of resonated all over the country. And obviously in the South, where a number of African Americans were already predisposed to get out of the South because of the general Jim Crow climate, the Ku Klux Klan and the boll weevil and what have you. So it was, the push and pull aspects of history were in motion. So when that particular announcement went out, particularly over the Chicago Defender, it just created like a thundering herd, you might say, running to get these jobs on the other side of the Cotton Curtain into the so-called promised land of Detroit and Chicago. But I think Detroit is important because the largest influx hit there because of the automobile industry. And certainly, you had to have the Urban League put in place. The National Urban League got it started pretty much in Detroit because they had to deal with this huge influx of this population, which they were not prepared to deal with from a housing standpoint in terms of social welfare, the kind of conditions that prevailed there. It created a necessity of having the Urban League, and individuals like Forrester B. Washington and John Dancy, they were in the forefront of that in getting black people adjusted and oriented to a whole different environment, a whole different culture, in fact.
You describe very well the contrasts in some of the various movements in Detroit, a radical politics, but a very entertaining musical culture. Motown, is incredibly powerful, and those tunes are memorable everywhere in the world. Yet Motown isn't protest music of the 60s so much.
Well, one of the things, and you're absolutely right in terms of Motown being the veritable soundtrack of a whole generation. And they had to be, I think it's the artists there. We have to understand someone like a Marvin Gaye and a Stevie Wonder in particular, who began to bring a political tinge and edge, into that whole music enterprise. In the 1967-68 period, particularly after the 67 rebellion there, you have like an intense concern, about social and political consciousness. And Marvin brought all of that in what's going on.
Don't punish me with brutality.
Sister.
Talk to me.
Sister.
So you can see.
And of course, Stevie followed up with that. And so the whole concept album, John, was created by Marvin and Stevie Wonder. And of course, when you say concept album, you talk about an opportunity for them to get beyond just pure entertainment and began to comment on the social and political conditions that prevailed at that time.
A model which influences hip hop, which influences.
Oh, yes, that's going to be kind of a
white protest music. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, all over the place. We think of the 60s riots in Detroit, but you remind us of the very important 1940s unrest
exactly.
In Detroit. Why is that important?
It's in the middle of the kind of tension that existed in the community between the black and the white residents. But then it takes on a different edge there because it's a little bit more intense, it's a little bit more hostile, and some of the conditions that prevailed at that time was an accumulation of the kind of racism and white supremacy parts of the Detroit's history that was going on at that time. But there's always like a cumulative effect. You know, you said people try to put their finger on the pulse of it. And that's very difficult to do because you can see it's an accumulation of a different kind of racial tension and animosity and the racism, the bigotry, the discrimination that went on in housing, for example, because blacks were essentially concerned and confined, constricted, circumscribed into what they call Black Bottom in Paradise Valley.
Well, whatever the triggers were, I mean, the brutality and the body count at the end was something
very unique, and there are 34 bodies, and that number is going to be reversed in 67. It'll be 43 casualties, and of course, blacks were predominantly among those casualties and fatalities, both in 43 and in 1967.
Let's get to some of the surprises that you find here in this book. One of them, to me, I thought I knew a lot about Coleman Young, but Coleman Young was one of the refused to rat out anyone before the House Un-American
HUAC, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The committee. I mean, he stood there like the Hollywood folks who also refused to say whether they were a member of the Communist Party and suffered dearly for it.
And you're absolutely right, John, in terms of looking at his labor record. The kind of activism, going back to the service when he was in the military, he began to express the same kind of obstinance, you might say, you know, just unrepentant in terms of his stands that he took on racial matters.
Everybody going to have a bite at the apple. There will be equal opportunity for all. There will be no discrimination.
And then later on, you know, when he's a young man, he's hired at Ford Motor Company. And he has an encounter there with Harry Bennett's goon squad that was attacking people who were sympathetic to the union movement at that time. And Coleman picked up a piece of steel rod and went upside one of the goons' head. Of course, that ended his career at the Ford Motor Company. But it was an indication of kind of resistance and his reluctance to tolerate any kind of racism and discrimination.
Herb Boyd is a professor of African American history and culture at the City College of New York. His new book is Black Detroit, A People's History of Self-Determination. Herb Boyd, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.